history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, those heroes really are out there, often seemingly ordinary Americans who, if we'll only take a little time to ask some questions and listen, we're going to learn that they've done extraordinary things on our behalf. The idea here is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price has been paid for our freedom. And as we take that journey, we learn so much. We are educated, we're entertained, and ultimately, so often, we end up inspired by their incredible life stories. That process of education and inspiration is one that takes place 6 days a week at the Flying Leathernecks Aviation Museum at Marine Corps Air Station Miramar in San Diego, California. You know, I end up in San Diego a few times a year, but I had never been to this particular museum until a volunteer there named George Halalakos invited me down. Now, after getting a little taste of it, I know I'm going to be back. And you may have a similar feeling after hearing from a couple of Marine Corps pilots today. In a bit, we'll hear from 96-year-old Glenn Ferguson, a veteran of World War II and the Korean War, which, if you didn't hear the news this week, is officially over after 68 years. What a stunner there. But before we hear from Mr. Ferguson, a retired Marine Corps major, I want you to hear from a retired Major General. Bob Butcher is only 82 years old, and he'll pass for a lot younger than that. The West Virginia native is the chairman of the board of directors for the Flying Leathernecks Aviation Museum, which you can visit online, by the way, at flyingleathernecks.org. I also have that linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. But General, why don't we start with how this unique museum ended up here in San Diego?
Well, the Aviation Museum actually started up at El Toro, but when they closed El Toro in 1999, we moved it down here to MCAS Miramar and put it on the base at Miramar, put it right next to the Officers Club so that it would get the most visibility that it could, and right alongside Miramar Road so that it could be easily and readily accessible to the public.
Now, we've all heard one of the few, the proud, the Marines. I guess if it comes to Marine Corps aviation, that's even fewer. Does that mean
yeah,
more proud, too?
You can't be more proud than being a Marine. Bingo. I mean, if you're a Marine, you're proud. It doesn't get any better than that. And even though we're aviators, first of all, we're Marines.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing we learn, I don't know how they do it to us, but somehow when we're in boot camp or officer candidate school, they teach you that you're a very special breed. And actually, having lived it for most of my life, I actually believe it. I think that the Marines are very special.
That doesn't change even when you reach the rank of Major General?
No. It's no significant difference whether you're a private or a general. You're still a Marine. You still focus on being the best that you can be. 99% of us do that.
So what's the purpose? What's the mission of this museum?
The primary mission of the museum, because it is a command museum, is to educate Marines and educate their families regarding what Marine aviation is and what it does. But we've expanded on that to encourage the public and to include the public because over the years, I think people have lost a lot of what it takes to make America what America is. And I don't think they teach it in classes anymore, at least to a significant extent. They don't teach what it is to be an American. So what we try to do here is we try to take a piece of what it is to be an American, specifically what it takes to be a Marine aviator or a guy that works on Marine airplanes, and encourage people to really focus on what that has meant to make America what America is.
Well, and I understand there's a pretty interesting story how the museum ended up here in San Diego. And really, I'm talking to the guy who saved this museum. It didn't have a place to go if you weren't part of this equation. And that story goes back quite a ways before that. What's the backstory to the Flying Leatherneck Museum ending up here?
Actually, if it hadn't been me, it would have been somebody else. The museum would have been brought down here from El Toro. But it does go back a long way. In 1971, I was assigned to be the officer selection officer in Philadelphia. I was a young major. I wanted to fly. And back in those days, if you could find a place to fly, you could. You didn't didn't have to. You got paid anyway. But I knew they had A4s at Willow Grove, which is just north of Philly. And I was an A4 pilot, so I went up there. A personal friend of mine was running the unit, so I asked him if I could fly his airplanes. He said, no, you can't do that. These are for reserves, so you can't. They're meant for the reserves to fly. And so I said, well, it won't hurt to write a letter to, who do I write it to? So I wrote it to a Brigadier General Hubbard, and he called me up a couple of months later and said, hey, Butcher, I don't know you from Adams off Ox, but anybody who wants to fly airplanes doesn't have to, can fly my airplanes any day. So I flew his airplanes for 2 years, ran into him a couple of years later at a cocktail party, was introduced to him. Told him I owed him a favor. He said, oh, I remember that. And that's the last we said about the subject for 20 years or so. And, you know, I got to know J. Hubbard very well. Just a great man, actually. But my wife, my first wife, passed away in 96, and he called me in probably the middle of 1997 and said, Thunder. Thunder was my call sign. He said, Thunder, Patty has passed away. You need something to do, and you owe me a favor. So I joined his board of directors and formed a steering committee down here at Miramar. And in 1999, we brought the museum down to Miramar and took over the 501c3 from their foundation and grew our support for the museum. The museum is a command museum. It belongs to the commanding officer of the air station. And we are a support unit that supports the museum. Everybody mm-hmm. believes that since it's a Marine museum, it's on the base, that the Marine Corps funds it. And they do. They do fund the basic properties of the museum, the curator and an archivist and things like that, and somebody in charge of restoring the airplanes. But it depends on volunteers. And we have about 70 volunteers, 30 or 35 of which are hardcore. You can depend on any day to do anything that you need them to do. Mm-hmm. And so we depend on those volunteers to man and staff the museum, to restore the airplanes, to act as docents, to work in the museum store. The museum would not function without the volunteers. And the board of directors are all volunteers. We have two employees, but other than that, we're all volunteers.
Well, and I'm just thinking about the story you just told us with that call that you got. Have you ever thought about how your life would be different if he hadn't realized that this Marine needed a new mission?
Every once in a while, I think about it, but no, not really. I mean, I bless him for thinking of me, and it's been a labor of love. I'd come here four days a week, sometimes more. But I come here every day gladly, willingly, and when I leave, I have a smile on my face. Not because of anything that I did, but because of the people that we have here and the people that come through the museum, the people that you meet every day that you wouldn't know them otherwise. And there are some very special stories that we as volunteers here, and the docents feel the same way. They're really happy to be here because the things that they hear and the stories that they hear and the people that they get to meet, it's priceless. I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad I'm able to do what I'm doing.
Because there are a lot of retired Marine Corps generals or Army generals, Air Force generals, Navy admirals who are out playing golf or they're going on a cruise or they're doing all these other things. And you're over here with the museum, making sure that it keeps going and recruiting more volunteers.
If it wasn't me, it'd be somebody else.
But you're here.
I'm just lucky enough to have the job. So I just consider it a blessing.
Well, and you've got a lot of competition. I mean, San Diego is a big tourist spot. You've got the zoo. You've got the pro sports teams, the college teams, SeaWorld, Legoland, Balboa Park, the USS Midway. Some of those people haven't heard of your museum. If they're hearing about it for the first time right now, tell them what they're going to see.
The first thing they'll experience is the docents as they walk in the door. And the docents really are the heart of who we are, what we are. They're military from all services and civilians who have never been in the service. But that's the first thing they'll experience. They'll get to meet these people and start to get really a feel for what the museum is. And of course, in the museum itself, we've only got 4,200 square feet of space inside the museum, but it's packed with Marine memorabilia, Marine history from the very early days in 1912 when the first Marine Corps aviator was designated right to today. So they'll see a cross-section of Marine aviation, and they will see, among other things, the 30 trophies that are awarded every year to outstanding Marine units and individuals. They will also see the Jill Foss exhibit that we have, the Navajo Code Talkers exhibit we have, and one exhibit that I'm really proud of we have an exhibit that traces every single flight that NASA flew and has in gold shields behind the logos of those flights any flight that had a Marine on it, and fully 25% of flights that were flown by NASA, starting with John Glenn, 25% of those flights had at least one Marine on them.
And you're talking about everything that's inside, and people could spend hours here diving into it and trying to process all of it. But you also have quite a few aircraft on display outside. Planes and helicopters.
Yeah, we have helicopters, fixed-wing airplanes, prop airplanes, jet airplanes, including four A-4 Skyhawks, which is a plane that I flew for 31 years. You can get right up close to them, get your picture taken beside them. In the summertime, every other weekend, we do open cockpit days where we allow people to come in and actually sit in the cockpit of three or four of our airplanes. But they'll be able to sit in a jet airplane and look at all the instruments. And if they've never been in an airplane, a single seat airplane before, they'll look at those instruments and say, how did anybody ever learn to fly those? They also can start out in a T-34, which is the first airplane that I flew, a T-34 Mentor that's right out in front. And it's a very basic airplane, but I'm here to tell you, when I first sat down in that airplane, I said, how am I ever going to be able to fly this by myself?
I'm thinking, too, of what you shared about this being a command museum at the discretion of the commander of the Marine Corps Air Station Miramar, and having so many current day Marines in the neighborhood. I'm wondering how often they stop by and look at what their predecessors, guys like you and Major Ferguson, who we're going to hear from, what they went through and the equipment they had to work with. Do you ever have guys come in and marvel at some of those things?
More than them marveling at what we've done, I marvel at them. I mean, I'm telling you, the Marine aviator of today is so much better than we were when I came. You know, frankly, I would not qualify to be a Marine aviator today. My grades weren't good enough, and I was kind of a loose cannon in the early days of my career in the Marine Corps. I didn't intend to make it a career. It just grew on me. But the Marines today are so much better qualified than we were 50 years ago, 60 years ago.
So if they come here, if you have some of those Marine Corps aviators who are flying the multi-million dollar jets of today and they stop by the museum, what do you hope that they see or soak in or are moved by here?
I think that for the most part, they know the basic history of the Marine Corps because the Marine Corps teaches them that. But what they get to do is to put a face to the history of Marine aviation and to see the individual acts of heroism and the individual acts of bravery and begin to understand the Marine Corps aviation is a lot of different moving parts. And they get to see that and to appreciate that down through history.
And I know you're proud of what the museum is today and the people who make it go. There's something satisfying about having a team of volunteers. You never question how invested they are because they're doing something because they want to do it. But what about the future? Is there a vision that you hope this museum can turn into or a space that you hope it will occupy long term?
Yeah, we have submitted plans to Headquarters Marine Corps and we're waiting for them to consider those plans that would permit us to build on this site a large museum structure that would be able to house most of our airplanes undercover. That is desperately needed because we didn't understand that coming from El Toro, we didn't appreciate that being this close to the ocean, that we would get the clouds that come in every night, and then as they evaporate the next morning, they leave the salt spray that came in with those clouds is deposited on the airplanes. And as you know, salt is very destructive to the metal of the airplanes. So we have a big problem with keeping these airplanes in show shape, and so we need a museum structure to cover them up so that they aren't exposed to the elements. So we've submitted a plan for Headquarters Marine Corps. Hopefully in the next year or so they'll approve that plan for us and we'll be able to fundraise for that structure and build a structure that will cover them up and will adequately represent Marine Corps aviation. We're the only aviation museum in the Marine Corps. That's right here at Miramar, and there will not be another one, because these old priceless assets are gradually going away. I don't think we'll have that much trouble raising that money because there are an awful lot of people around who can honestly say that they're alive today because Marine Aviation was there when they needed them.
What if someone's listening right now and they say, hey, that sounds like a, a special place. Maybe I've even visited there before. I want to be a volunteer.
Give me a call. Yeah, we obviously need volunteers. You never have enough volunteers. Call us at 858-693-1723. Tell us at what you want to do, how you want to help us. Look us up on the website at www.flyingleathernecks.org or come out and see us. We'd love to see you.
And they don't have to be a Marine.
You don't have to be a Marine. No, all you have to do is have a love for aviation and a love particularly for military aviation and specifically for Marine Corps aviation.
Have you ever had anyone show up here and say, what's a flying leatherneck?
It happens all the time. And I tell them. And it dates back to the sailing ship days of when we provided security on Navy sailing ships. Over the time, they found that the saber cuts that they were getting was causing a lot of deaths because the sabers would bounce off the shoulder and cut the arteries in the neck and the person would bleed to death. So they developed these leather shields that went around the neck that attached to their uniform. And so when the sabers hit the shoulder, they bounced up and hit these leather guards, and they became known as leathernecks.
Just from self-preservation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the flying part came. There was a John Wayne movie called Flying Leathernecks, which, by the way, you don't have to like marine aviation or even aviation to enjoy that movie, because that movie is truly about leadership and what it takes to be a leader. It's a really fascinating, great movie.
I can't tell you how many veterans have told me over the years, I wanted to get in the service because I saw that movie, or I saw John Wayne. Yeah. And John Wayne played a few different servicemen during World War II.
Yes, he did.
But he inspired a lot of guys who did sign up. And what about your own Marine Corps history? I've seen some of your decorations and commendations. A highly decorated career, retiring as a Major General, Distinguished Flying Cross, Bronze Star, Defense Distinguished Service Medal. None of those are easy to get.
I was at the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. Or in the wrong place at the right time in the case of the DFC.
Well, that sounds like a story we need to hear, doesn't it? Time for our first break, but we will hear that Distinguished Flying Cross story from General Bob Butcher when we come back to the Flying Leathernecks Aviation Museum in San Diego. Did I mention admission is free and it's open every day but Monday? Check out the photos, video, and more information at hometownheroesradio.com, and we'll be right back after this.